بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبا القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، respected scholars, brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We had begun the analysis of chapter 49 of the Holy Quran, known as Surah Al-Hujurat, by examining that in seeking to build an ethical community, in seeking to build moral standpoints, the first part of the message of the Prophet within the Holy Quran, peace be upon him, was that God had ordered the believers that before we give you any ethical command, first you need to understand that you need unconditional submitting towards this man and his commands. If you're not unconditionally submitting to his commands, then this ethical system will never flourish. Because every time he makes a statement and you end up questioning the statement, then the ethical guidelines which are coming from the heavens to the people of the earth are not going to be able to be as fruitful as they should be. Let's continue now to see what was the first of the etiquettes which he sought to establish in this ethical community. Verse number 2. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu la tarfa'u aswatakum fawqa sawti an-nabi wa la tajharu lahu bil qawli ka jahri ba'dikum li ba'd an tahbata a'malukum wa antum la tash'urun. Notice that this verse, what does it say? O you who believe, do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet of God, and do not be loud in speaking to him like you speak to one another. For if you do this, then all of your good deeds will be made void while you do not realize. The religion of Islam has many social etiquettes which it seeks its followers to observe. And the way it allowed these social etiquettes to come to the fore was by the education of this rough group of people called the Arabs. Because these people did not really have so much in the way of social etiquette in the way they spoke to each other, for example. And so this verse, you will see the verses within the Quran, use the example of the Prophet of God and his interaction to then tell us about the way we interact with each other. Because we know very well that the tongue of the human being can either make the human being or break the human being. Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen salawatullah wa salamuhu alayhi, has a phenomenal line where he describes the tongue of the human being in only a few words. He says, "Jurmuhu saghir, jurmuhu thaqil." He says, the weight of the tongue of the human being is so light, the power of the tongue of the human being is so great. If you were to take the tongue of a human and weigh it on weighing scales, how much would it weigh? It's not going to weigh that much, is it? It's not like, for example, our feet or our legs. or other parts of the body. But can our feet and our legs cause as much trouble in this world as our tongue? So Imam then says in another line, man's honor is under his tongue. Man's honor is under his tongue. How he uses his ability and that freedom of speech, where Allah says in the Quran, وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ خَلْقُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافِ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ وَأَلْوَانِكُمْ. Allah says, amongst our signs is the creation of the heavens and the earth and the differences in your tongues and your races. Meaning the differences in your languages and your races. These are amongst Allah's signs that He's given us the ability to speak in different languages. Yet within each of these languages there remains a social etiquette. When to speak, how to speak, with who to speak. Shaykh Hurr al-Amali, may Allah bless his soul, the author of Wasa'il al-Shia. In our traditions, in the school of Ahlul Bayt, there are some great works which have to be studied before a person can reach the highest rank in scholarship. You have to study Al-Kafi of Shaykh al-Kulayni. You have to study Man la yahdarahu al-Faqih of Shaykh al-Saduq. You have to study Tahdhib al-Ahkam and Al-Istabsar of Shaykh al-Tusi. You have to study, for example, Wasa'il al-Shia of Shaykh Hurr al-Amali. You have to study, for example, Bihar al-Anwar of Allama al-Majlisi. There are also other works which are works of the principles of jurisprudence by great men such as Ayatollah al-Ansari, which have to be studied before a person reaches the highest level. In Wasa'il al-Shia, which has collected many of the hadiths of Al-Muhammad, there is actually a section within the Wasa'il which is called the etiquette of social intercourse while traveling and while at home. The etiquette of social intercourse while traveling and while at home. Social intercourse, of course, relates to us as human beings, that we are social animals, aren't we? If you put a human being in confinement, except Imam Musa ibn Ja'far, I think everybody else went crazy. Imam Musa ibn Ja'far is probably the only man in history who you could have put in confinement, and the first thing he said was, thank you Allah, I've asked you all my life to allow me to worship you alone, now I thank you for the honor. But everybody else, I think, will not survive, because we are social animals. We want to interact with each other. So the Ahlul Bayt, the family of the Prophet, knowing this, narrated many traditions about how we talk with each other, how we walk with each other, how we greet each other. Notice in the religion of Islam, we have a greeting nobody else has in this whole world. Our greeting of Assalamu Alaikum is a greeting whether you are white or you are black or you are from India or you are from Africa or you are from Australasia. When a Muslim sees another Muslim, Assalamu Alaikum. There's a common greeting, peace be upon you. You find that Al-Hurr al-Amali within Wasa'il al-Shia, many hadiths of the Prophet about how the Prophet used to interact with these people. For example, he was the first to greet. In our community sometimes, we reach a level where, like, if they're not saying salam to me, I'm not saying salam to them. But the manners of our Prophet was, I'll go and greet. If they don't greet me back, what can I do? At least I went and greeted them. And true stinginess is when a person offers you a greeting and you don't reply back. That's stinginess. From the traditions of Ahlul Bayt. Secondly, in those hadiths, it says that if the Prophet was walking in the street and you said salamu alaykum to him or you greeted him, he wouldn't from far away look back at you and just say like this. No. There would be an attempt to turn the whole body and say salam. You would find even number three, the Prophet, if he saw someone make an error while speaking, doesn't jump on them. Come to our communities at annual general meetings. Isn't it? You know, elections? Come and see the akhlaq of the lovers of Muhammad. But you in your manifesto said this, in your meeting said this, but you are wrong here. Shouting and screaming. Hold on a minute, hold on. What religion are we following? Religion of animals or humans? We have a prophet who came to perfect the morals of mankind. Not for us to come and scream at each other. When he saw someone making an error, it wasn't a walking peacock on the earth correcting him. Rather, the prophet said, excuse me, maybe this point, can I just ask for clarification? There was a manner of social etiquette and social intercourse with the people. If any of his companions, by the way, were not present at a gathering, he would ask about them. In our mosques today, if we don't see our friend present, do we give them a call to say, I hope everything is alright, I didn't see you today at the mosque? There's an etiquette, isn't there? Another etiquette, if someone walked into the room and he was sitting, he would stand up. I have seen many Muslim communities where I have lectured. And there are a couple of communities in particular. If there's five of you sitting in a room and someone walks in, they won't stand up. They'll stay sitting. And the person, when he says salam to them, will have to say salam like this. Ask yourself, when your friends walk into a room in a dinner invite, do you stand up or no? Many will say, are you joking? He said, Ammar, I've never stood up. Even Mawlana, I just about stand up for. And even that's gone now. So what you find is that all of these social etiquettes exist. And were begun by the Prophet and his family. Why? Someone says, why? What's the need for this? Because automatically when you show good manners to a human being, you have psychologically grabbed that being. The Prophet doesn't need to say Islam, cosmology, metaphysics, philosophy, la, 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 all these long words. Manners. Our sixth Imam says, all you need to do is present our teachings with good manners, people will flock to us. You can have all the knowledge in the world, but manners is the base. So you found that the basis of good manners is the tongue. Either I use this tongue in a good way or a bad way. And that's why, for example, the Prophet noticed, peace be upon him, that some of his companions, when they used to walk past the idols of the idol worshippers, they used to use abusive language against the idols or the idol worshippers. And the Prophet told them from a direction from Allah in chapter 6 verse 108 of the Quran, وَلَا تَسُبُّوا الَّذِينَ يَدْعُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ فَيَسُبُّوا اللَّهِ عَدْوًا بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ. Do not abuse the idols of the idol worshippers, because they'll turn round and abuse your Lord. If I see an idol worshipper, my religion and his religion differ. But does that mean I lower my etiquette in the way I speak to him? Or the way I speak to her? Do I use abusive language? No. Abusive language has no place within this religion. Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen in the Battle of Siffin hears his companions abusing Muawiyah. And he stops them. And he says, I do not like my companions to be of those who abuse. If you have an issue with Muawiyah, then bring out the points of differences and that's enough. Sab, the Arabic word for abuse, wasn't part of the social etiquette of the religion of Islam. Now this verse, someone asked the question, this verse, when was it revealed? Like, why would Allah reveal this verse? On what occasion? The narrations say to us that in the 9th year after Hijrah, we call this Aam al-Wufud. Aam al-Wufud, what did we say? We said Aam al-Wufud is the year of the delegations. Wafd is a delegation. Wufud is the plural of delegate, of one delegation. Delegations. The year of the delegations, the Prophet of God has now established himself at the helm of the Islamic State. A lot of the people want to come and visit him to talk with him about his religion. When they'd come to see him, to talk with him, he'd be in his room. Now the narrations, what would they say to us? First, the narrations say to us that there was an incident that preceded this one. The incident that preceded this one was when one of the groups, according to different narrations, when Banu Tamim were coming to Medina, Abu Bakr, the first Khalifa, and Umar ibn al-Khattab, the second Khalifa, wanted to see who should welcome these people. So Abu Bakr put forward a name, and Umar put forward a name, and they started fighting each other as to who should welcome them. Loudly, in front of the Prophet, they raised their voice and they were shouting, I believe this person should go, the other one said, I believe. And the voices were raised and raised and raised. And you found a verse in the Quran saying, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, La tarfa'u aswatakum fawqa sawti an-nabi. O you who believe, do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet. وَلَا تَجْهَرُوا لَهُ بِالْقَوْلِ كَجَهْرِ بَعْضِكُمْ لِبَعْضٍ. And do not speak to him in the way you speak to one another. What, Rasulullah is the same as you? Rasulullah, when he's in your company, you fight with each other like everybody else fights with each other? And the Quran mentions something interesting here. أَن تَحْبَطَ أَعْمَالُكُمْ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَشْعُرُونَ. Otherwise, all your good deeds of the past become null and void and you don't even realize it. When this verse was also revealed, there was a person by the name, in some traditions Thabit and others Tabib. He was deaf. So when he'd come near Rasulullah, he would be like, Ya Muhammad. And some of the people said to him, did you not hear which verse was revealed in the Quran? When they'd explained to him which verse was revealed in the Quran, the narrations would say that he began to be sad. That maybe I'm the cause of this verse being revealed. To which the Prophet said, no, people like yourself with a disability, Allah opens the doors of Jannah for them. The doors of Jannah open for them. Do not think you're the cause. No, there are others, the way they talk, they are the cause. On top of that, the next verse, what did it say? The next verse, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَغُضُّونَ أَصْوَاتَهُمْ عَنْدَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ امْتَحَنَ اللَّهُ قُلُوبَهُمْ لِلتَّقْوَى لَهُمْ مَغْفِرَةٌ وَأَجْرٌ عَظِيمٌ. Those who lower their voice in the presence of Rasulullah, their hearts are being tested by Allah. They will be given forgiveness and a great reward. Many of the companions, after this verse was revealed, many of them lowered their voice when they'd come to speak to Rasulullah. Why? Because they realized Allah was instilling an Islamic etiquette through them and that He was testing them. Now someone says, how could you test a human's heart through the way they spoke to Rasulullah? Someone asks. Because your true feelings come out in the way your tone is with another human. If I come to Hajj and I say, Salaamu Alaikum Hajji, how are you? It's great to see you. My tone is a pleasant tone. If I come to another person and say, Salaam, yes, are you alright? Okay, okay. The heart is showing itself. I don't like this person. I'm saying salam to them just to get this over and done with. If I get angry with someone quickly, my heart is showing. Because what you say with your words comes from the heart. So the Quran said to those companions, those of you who lower your voices, we're seeing what's in your heart. Those of you who raise your voices against the voice of the Prophet, all your good deeds you had before, they are null and void. Imagine, if Rasulullah is living with me, and I raise my voice above Rasulullah, every single story you mentioned about me from the day I joined Islam until that day is gone. Did it happen? Of course it happened. On a number of occasions. And arguably the most famous occasion it happened was the calamity of Thursday. Go and Google calamity of Thursday. All I want you to do is read it. From the bottom of my heart, just go and read what happened on the calamity of Thursday. The Quran said what? O you who believe, you claim to have belief, you claim to be mu'min, do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet. And do not speak to him like you speak to one another, because your deeds which were good will all be nullified. Rasulullah is on his deathbed. And he's already asked some of his companions, please, go with Usama's army. Usama was 18 years old. His father, Zayd, had died in the Battle of Mu'tah a couple of years earlier. So Rasulullah wanted Usama to lead the army for two reasons. One, revenge for what had happened to his father. Two, a couple of years earlier, Usama was a 15-year-old and stood alongside Ali ibn Abi Talib in Islam's greatest victory on the day of Hunayn. You know what's Hunayn? You know what happened at Hunayn? I tell you, you cannot express in words how much Ali ibn Abi Talib gave this religion. Khaybar? Wallah, Khaybar is not an inch of what he did at Hunayn. Ali ibn Abi Talib at Hunayn was on a completely different level on the battlefield. Because the opposition were from Ta'if, Thaqif and Hawazin, phenomenal warriors. These were the best soldiers you will find in Arabia. But there's only 4,000 of them. Ali ibn Abi Talib, leading Rasulullah's army with Khalid ibn al-Walid, there was 12,000 of them. Rasulullah told Khalid ibn al-Walid, he said, Khalid, don't approach this battle arrogantly. Because there's 12,000 of us and 4,000 of them. I remember a day at Badr, we were small, they were big. And we defeated them. Because we weren't arrogant. Khalid ibn al-Walid thought, I'll finish this battle off easily, leave it to me. In the opposition, there were two phenomenal soldiers. Uthman bin Abdullah and Malik bin Auf al-Nasri. These two, if they fought you as a double combination, you might as well forget your life. And you know those two, what they said before the battle? Do you know what they said? They said, we look at Muhammad's army and we see 12,000 soldiers. But there's only one soldier we fear. If we finish him, the others are easy. Now you need to be have some real guts to say something like this. True? So when they asked them, who is it you need to finish? They said, Ali, son of Abu Talib. If we finish him. So they said, how are you going to finish him? Said, double combination against him. From both sides, myself, Malik would say, and Uthman will come from both sides against him. Khalid bin Walid takes the army through a narrow part of the mountains. These people are mountain Arabs. They know their mountains. They come down from the mountains, ambush Khalid's army. Khalid's army turns around. 12,000 soldiers. Do you know how many remained? 8. They ran. And Ali ibn Abi Talib standing there with 7 soldiers. Ali ibn Abi Talib, who's the 7 around him? Amongst them are, for example, Al-Fadl ibn al-Abbas, and there were others, and there was Usama. Usama was only 15, yes? You know what Imam said? Imam said to those around him, he said, 7 of you just stay with me and leave the 4,000 to me. And there is a historian, a British historian, who says on that day, Ali ibn Abi Talib was like a demon possessed. The way he ran into that battlefield that day, there was no point standing in front of him. And those 7 were behind him and they stayed supporting him. And he managed to defeat the opposition. Did he kill 4,000? No, he didn't kill 4,000. But he killed the main leaders, the rest all ran away. The Muslims had run. Yet after Rasulullah dies, that word sword of Islam was given to everyone. Usama had performed valiantly. So Rasulullah said, Usama will lead the army. Some of these companions turned around and said, that was the first reason. The second reason Rasulullah wanted Medina to be rid of those who would cause trouble after he died. Because the army was meant to go and fight the Romans. So what happened was, some of the companions turned around and said, are you telling us that we fight under an 18-year-old? O you who believe, do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet. This is the man who's come to bring this religion. How dare you question his judgment? I would think that most people think this is it. No. Then Rasulullah is where? Then Rasulullah is sleeping. While Rasulullah is sleeping, he is fallen ill. And these companions are now all around his bed. Type the calamity of Thursday. The companions are around his bed. Rasulullah is in his last moments. He's saying, give me a pen and paper so I may write for you that which will ensure you will never go astray. One of these companions, you know, says to him, you are delirious. The Quran is enough for us. Hold on. Let me go back to the Quran. Let me 1 second go back. O you who believe, do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet. And do not speak to him like you speak to one another. Otherwise your good deeds which you've done before are all void. Now tell me, when someone comes and tells me, but Sayyid Ammar, this person did A, B and C and D and E and F and G and H and F for Islam. I say, wallah, one moment you said Rasulullah was delirious, everything finished. Finished. What type of manners does a person have? And Sahih al-Bukhari narrates this. Sahih Muslim narrates this. Musnad Ahmad bin Hanbal narrates this, and all of them narrate it with a sound chain from Ibn Abbas. I beg all of you to go and read the whole hadith. Someone came and said to me, he didn't say Rasulullah is delirious. He said, Rasulullah, you are overcome by illness. Overcome by illness. So why do you need to say the Quran is sufficient for us? If I come and tell you, you are overcome by illness, I don't then need to give you advice on what's enough for us. Do I? No. I'll say, Hajji, you're overcome by illness. But Hajji had said, I'm going to do what? I'm going to write for you a will so that none of you go astray. If I tell Hajji you've overcome by illness, will I then tell Hajji, and this is what you should write? The moment he said the Quran is enough for us, in other words, he knew what was going to be written. But do you think Rasulullah allowed this? Do you know what Rasulullah did? He said, everyone leave. Leave. I gave you a social etiquette in this Quran. Do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet. It is not akhlaq against me, nor is it akhlaq against anyone who's on his deathbed. Tell me, your father, honestly, your father. Those of you who may Allah bless the souls of your fathers. When your fathers were dying, did you have the audacity to raise your voice against your father? Your father on his deathbed, did you raise your voice against him or no? Or were you so humble and sad and crying? But the father of this ummah, they had the audacity to raise their voice against him. He said, everyone leave. Except Ali, Abbas, my uncle, and his son Al-Fadl. Everyone leave. Don't stay here. And people say to us, why do you people question their action? I say, Habibi, look in your books. How can I trust a group of people who question the mouth of Rasulullah? How? Someone says, so he didn't write a will? Isn't it wajib on someone to write a will? These people have not understood the concept. When I write a will, I can write the will and let the whole ummah hear it. Or I can give it to my son-in-law and my successor and tell him to execute it. Ali ibn Abi Talib received the will from Rasulullah, and he executed the will on behalf of Rasulullah. Do you think that this verse would be used later on? Yes, of course. Do you know who used this verse later on? One of the saddest moments in Islamic history, when Imam al-Hasan died. Imam al-Hasan, before he died, he had a wasiyah, he had a will. He said, I beg you, let me be buried next to my grandfather. That's all I want in my life. That's all he wanted. Just let me be buried next to my grandfather. There was a group of people there. One was a woman. And there were other men like Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Marwan ibn al-Hakam tells us where to bury Imam al-Hasan. That's Islamic history for you. Imam al-Hussein wanted Imam al-Hasan's janazah to be taken and buried next to Rasulullah. You know what they did? These two ordered the people. Wallah, if you read the narrations, I swear. If you read the narrations, the way they raised their voices, screaming in public, screaming. No way he's buried here. No way he's buried here. No way. And you know what they ordered? Shoot arrows on the janazah of Imam al-Hasan. I tell you, any of you who have the honor of visiting Karbala, do something for me. When you're leaving the haram of Imam al-Hussein, turn around and look at all the visitors for Imam al-Hussein, and then think of how lonely Imam al-Hassan is in Jannat al-Baqi. Nobody is near Imam al-Hassan. Sits there alone in Jannat al-Baqi. When Imam al-Hussein heard her scream, Imam recited the verse, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, la tarfa'u aswatakum fawqa sawt an-nabi. Do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet. It applies while Rasul was alive and after he has died. Don't stand by his grave. That's my grandfather. And you're standing by his grave. Do not raise your voice even when he's passed away. Don't raise your voice. For then Imam al-Hussein said, إِنَّ اللَّهَ حَرَّمَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ أَمْوَاتًا مَا حَرَّمَ مِنْهُمْ أَحْيَانًا. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has forbidden the believer to act in relation to the deceased in any way which was prohibited to act during their lifetime. So you found that this verse highlighted to us that the way you talk to the Prophet was the beginning of the way you talk to each other. If you can't respect the Prophet when he is alive, do you think you'd respect Fatima? فاطمة بضعة مني من آذاها فقد آذاني. Fatima is a part of me, whoever angers her angers me. When Rasulullah said that, you know what he was saying? He was saying the same way the Quran said, don't raise your voice above me, don't raise your voice above Fatima. Because Fatima is a part of me, whoever angers her angers me. And yet you find the way Imam al-Bukhari narrates in his Sahih how Fatima al-Zahra died angry with those who were leading Islam. They angered the daughter of Rasulullah and they confiscated her rights. And they came to her door. Now someone says to me, Sayyid Ammar, they may have come to the door, but there isn't evidence that they pushed the door like you say. I say the moment Fatima said, this is the house of the daughter of Rasulullah, and the man replies raising his voice, so what? That's enough disrespect to Rasulullah. But was that the only etiquette which Rasulullah wanted to correct in them? The verse continued, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يُنَادُونَكَ مِنْ وَرَاءِ الْحُجُرَاتِ أَكْثَرُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ. The Quran said what? Those who call on you from behind your chambers. Surah Al-Hujurat. Hujurat means your chambers. Your private room. Yes? These people, when they'd come to visit Rasulullah, they'd come from outside his house and they'd say what? Ya Muhammad, ukhruj! Oh Muhammad, get out. Come out. Is that the way you speak to Rasulullah? Ya Muhammad, ukhruj. The Quran came and told them, that's not the way you speak to a person of knowledge. For us, that person of knowledge has passed away. But today we have ulama, don't we? Scholars. There is an etiquette Islam says you speak to the people of ilm. The people of ilm, you speak to them with humility, with respect, and without the raising of voices. Today, in Muslim communities, you find people who are raising voices against the people of ilm. Ask questions, there is nothing wrong, but don't be rude to them. For the Quran, what did it say? The Quran said, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يُنَادُونَكَ مِنْ وَرَاءِ الْحُجُرَاتِ أَكْثَرُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ. Most of them do not do what? They do not have any understanding or they don't reflect. My aql should tell me, who am I talking to? Who am I talking? I'm talking to someone who gives lectures. I'm talking to someone who's taught me lessons. Someone who's taught me Quran. Someone who's taught me hadith. What am I doing raising my voice above theirs? What am I doing saying, Ya Muhammad, ukhruj? Can you imagine how hard it was to deal with these people for Rasulullah? Honestly, how hard it is. But one thing about Rasulullah which he taught us, have patience with these people. For the Quran tells them to have patience when they deal. So Rasulullah had to have patience dealing with them. The Quran said, وَلَوْ أَنَّهُمْ صَبَرُوا حَتَّى تَخْرُجَ إِلَيْهِمْ لَكَانَ خَيْرًا لَهُمْ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. The Quran said, had they been patient until you came out to them, then what? It would have been better for them. Likewise, Rasulullah, you see how humble this man is. You see how soft-hearted he is. Do you think Rasulullah broke relations with any of these people when they spoke like that to him? This is the greatness of the man. This is the tolerance of the man. Today, Muslims don't have tolerance with each other. Rasulullah, they called him delirious. He had tolerance with them. They would say to him, Muhammad, ukhruj. He would have tolerance with them. Even when the lady keeps throwing trash at him every morning, a Jewish lady would throw trash at him as he's walking. And do you know what he would do? When he found out one day she was ill, he went to visit her. And he said to her, oh lady, I hear that you are ill. She said, but Muhammad, there are people who say to you by your name, get out and come and talk to us. And there are others who speak rudely to you. And I throw trash at you every morning. And you come and visit me. He said, because when a human being is not feeling well, it's our responsibility to go and ask about them. That's how you change and build an empire. Not knowledge. First, you zakkihim. Then you allimhum al-kitab wal-hikmah. Inshallah, tomorrow we will continue with verse 6, where we look at the sin of making up rumors about people's lives.